south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, let's start out with a little healthcare anecdote. Something that happened to me down here in Latin America that actually changed my life. Have you ever seen the pain list? That's a top 10 list that doctors compiled, indicating the most painful common things a human can experience. Now, the list varies depending on which doctor you talk to, but not much. In the top five, you'll usually hear things like childbirth, compound fracture, that would be broken bones, migraine headaches, third-degree burns, and an abscess tooth. And one kind of pain that only affects men, that would be a kick in the balls. And last but not least, gunshot wounds. That is, if you live in Chicago. But that's not normally the case in the rest of the world. So if you don't live in Chicago, we must defer to kidney stones. And that's what we're going to focus on here for just a minute. Kidney stones, because it seems to occur in older adults quite frequently. It turns out statistically, 1 in 8 people will get them. However, once you hit 50 and over, statistics say 1 in 5 adults will have kidney stones. Now, researchers will tell you that whether you get kidney stones or not depends on your diet and your genetics. Unfortunately for me, it runs in my family, on my dad's side. In fact, I remember a few times as a kid, I remember my dad pacing at midnight. My brother and I had a bedroom in the basement, so we'd hear my dad walking back and forth on the floor upstairs. I remember hearing him pacing and talking to himself. And my dad wasn't a drinker. I only saw him drunk one time in my whole life, when he and my mom came home after a Christmas party. And he could take pain, too. He lost his finger in a tool and die machine, and he walked over to the supervisor, who was 2 buildings away, and said, "I think I'd better drive myself to the hospital." Anyway, the few times I heard him pacing like that, I'd go upstairs, and I'd see him in anguish, sweat beads on his forehead, and then he'd finally lay down on the hardwood floor to try to get some relief that way. And then eventually, he'd go to the hospital. I think that happened at least twice. And somehow, once there, by hook and crook, he'd pass the kidney stone. Well, quite unluckily, he passed that trait on to me. Of course, I didn't know that till the first time it happened in about the year 2005. I happened to be in Guatemala when it hit, and I recognized the symptoms immediately. I started walking around, beads of sweat on my forehead, trying to walk myself into a comfortable position. And then when that didn't work, I'd take hot baths and showers. But the pain, even though it came and went, was intense. And finally, I couldn't take it anymore. I had to hit the emergency room at one of Guatemala's best private hospitals in Guatemala City, Zone 14. Remember now, that was in 2005, about 17 years ago. So they did all the tests, including the barium injections, to try to pinpoint where it was. Turns out it was in a particularly precarious position where they couldn't use the lipotropsy machine, you know, that's sort of a sonic bathtub you sit in, and they bombard you with sonic pulse waves. In most cases, it breaks the stone into little pieces, then you pass it. Anyway, the urologist there said the stone was too big and it was in such a position they couldn't do that. So they knocked me out with a general anesthetic and went after it. Now, I have to mention there's only one way to go at one of those things, and for a guy, it's a harrowing thought. I suppose the idea is no picnic for ladies stuck in that spot either. But for us guys, there's a lot more plumbing to navigate, if you get my drift. Plus, as most doctors and nurses will tell you, guys are cowards. Anyway, it's one of the few times in a man's life he wishes his external plumbing was a lot smaller than it really is. That said, some hours later, I woke up, went to the bathroom, pissed a lot of blood with some pain involved. But man, what a relief. But that relief only lasted about 20 minutes. Why? Because then the doctor came in and said, they got it all right, but they had to make sure the wall of the ureter remained open for the next few days or even week or so while it was healing. So they put a stent in there, a little kind of plastic straw-like thing, that was to remain inside of me for a month. Now, you might recall from your anatomy and physiology that the ureters go from your kidneys to your bladder. That's where the stone was lodged, at the junction of where the ureter met the bladder. And when they went in to get it out, they roughed up the ureter. That's where the blood came from. So they left a plastic straw-like stent in me for a month. so the ureter wouldn't collapse. It would heal around it. Now, I didn't feel it any because it was deep inside, but man, just a thought of it gave me the willies, so I tried not to think about it. And you know what happens then? The more you try not to think about it, the more you think about it. You know, it's that old stupid mind trick. When someone says, try not to think of an elephant, then all you can think of is an elephant. So anyway, a month later, I had to go back in under general anesthetic. They had to go in and pull that thing out. Of course, following that, you have a couple of days of painful bloody pee once again. A pretty revolting experience. Let's just say I was really glad to have that over with. And then, of course, you soon forget about it and get back into your regular routine. Oh, by the way, the doctors analyzed that stone. It was made mostly of oxalate, which comes from too much oxalic acid in your system, or so they say. By the way, some of the common foods that have lots of oxalic acid are almonds, spinach, brown rice, and chocolate. Oh, and get this, urologists are saying if you want to multiply your chances of getting kidney stones, drink a lot of Coca-Cola or any carbonated beverage that has phosphoric acid in it or phosphate. Somehow, and they don't know the exact mechanism, carbonated beverages, especially colas with phosphoric acid, cause certain microscopic urinary changes that lead to the formation of stones. By the way, I spent a day in the emergency room and stayed overnight in the hospital to get that procedure done the first time. And my out-of-pocket costs, of course, I had insurance, was $40. And the bill, had I not had insurance, was $1,600. Yep, that's right, $1,600 for a day in the emergency room and an overnight at the hospital and that laparoscopic non-invasive surgery. At least that's what they called it, non-invasive. But I beg to differ. Man, did I beg to differ. All right, so like I said, time went on and out of sight, out of mind. Turns out, suddenly, right before that COVID-iot nonsense, around 2018, suddenly, in the middle of the night, that same kind of pain came again. I instantly knew what it was. My first thought was, oh no, not another trip to the emergency room. Is this just going to keep on happening like it did with my dad every 10 years or so? Well, I went through the floor pacing routine, the hot and cold baths and showers. I even started packing a bag because I knew I was going to end up in the emergency room that night. But this time I phoned up someone who I thought might have some newer answers. After all, it was 12 years later. Maybe science had progressed a bit in the field of kidney stones. One could only hope. So I phoned up a girl I'd been dating, a newly minted MD, still doing her residency at one of the local hospitals, a military hospital. How about that? So she popped over right away and saw I had my bag packed and said, what's that for? I said, we're going to the emergency room. I know all about this stuff. I've been through it before. She said, no, you're not. We'll work it out here. And I said, no. You don't understand. I can't take another hour of this. Then she went into her purse and pulled out a little green and white box. The name on the box was Rowatinex, Rowatinex. She opened the box and there were a couple of blister packs in there with 100 tiny little yellow squishy soft gels. She said, take 3 of these now and 3 every 8 hours till your kidney stone passes, which could be late tonight or early tomorrow, who knows. And I looked at her and those little pills with great skepticism. I said, man, I don't know. Come on, this might be okay for someone's got a tiny stone. I know what mine are like. She said, take them, give them a chance to work and wait. And guess what? Within 3 hours, I felt that thing moving. And the pain would subside completely for a couple hours and then I'd feel it again, but never so intense as before. And finally, the next day, she was right. It passed. I fished it out with the strainer, and man, that thing was about as big as a dried pea, about a half a centimeter. And I said to my young lady doctor friend, hard to believe, but it's like a miracle drug. How did those little pills make that happen? She said, think of it like kind of a natural lubricant, like olive oil. She says it lubricates the inside walls of your ureters and urethra, like baby oil or suntan lotion on your skin. So the stones, no matter how irregular, don't get caught up in anything. They just slip right through. So anyway, the next day I bought another box of that stuff. You know, you don't need a prescription at the drugstore here. And I make sure I have a little blister pack of that stuff with me every time I travel. By the way, you'll never guess where that stuff's made. In Germany. And they've got a plant in Ireland, too. And the cost, even though it's imported from Germany all the way to Central America, about $20 for 100 of them. That's enough for about 2 or 3 treatments. For me, that'd be like 20 years worth. But that's not the end of the story. Turns out, about a month ago, I was at one of those big all-inclusive resorts once again. And in the middle of the night, the same kind of pain came back. Now, the last time I had it, was back in 2018, 4 years earlier. But I had my trusty old blister of Roatenix in my travel pack. I instantly started taking three of those things every 8 hours, and though I did a lot of pacing that night, along with some baths and showers, the next day, out it came. Boop! The point is, if I hadn't have been told about that stuff, I surely would have made two trips to the emergency room, and possibly they'd have gone at it with one of those lipotropsy machines where you sit in a bath and they bombard your thorax with sound waves. Or maybe that wouldn't have been indicated and they'd had to go in after it, like they did in 2005. Talk about experiencing Dante's second level of hell. However, do you really think if I'd have gone into the emergency room, they would have given me a box of Roatenix and sent me home to tough it out for a half a day or so? I don't think so. Just saying. Anyway, when I asked my young doctor friend how she found out about that stuff, Roatenix, she said, lots of kidney stones going around here in Latin America because people aren't all that hydrated. Bottled water's expensive. The sun is hot, people sweat, yet they don't drink enough water, but they drink a lot of soda and sugary drinks. Exactly the recipe for kidney stones, called cálculos de riñones down here. Riñones are kidneys and cálculos, calcified stones. By the way, if you look at the ingredients in one of these soft gels, you'll find that there's five different ingredients suspended in, get this, olive oil. And the product description, exactly what you want to hear. It says the capsules dissolve and expel kidney stones. Certainly no false claims there. Hey, if I hadn't tried it myself, I never would have believed it. So then why am I telling you all this? Well, if you're one of the 1 in 8 people that are going to suffer with those things, or 1 in 5 if you're over 50. If you happen to be in Latin America, just go to the drugstore and get a box of that stuff and keep it around the house and skip the emergency room. Now, I don't know if you can get that stuff up in the States. Maybe, maybe not. Someone told me you can get it on Amazon. That could be true because it's like a supplement. It only contains natural ingredients, nothing proprietary. Though I kind of doubt that docs are prescribing that stuff up in the States. After all, for hospitals and urologists, it's an affront to their bottom line. Sound familiar? Sort of like the ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine story, huh? By the way, looking at the data sheet on that Roatenix stuff, it was patented in 2009. So it's only been around less than 15 years. That's probably the reason why when I had my first attack in 2005, it wasn't an option. All right, now, speaking of Germany, where those pills are made, we've got an email from Holger, who relocated from Germany to Mexico. He says, hi, Johnny. I'm 38 years old and living in Mexico since 2018 and loving every second of it. I get so depressed, though, thinking about ever going back to grumpy, sad, woke Germany. It's so crazy. After my first trip to Mexico about 5 years ago, when I came back to Germany because I had to, I realized how sad, cold, and depressed the people of Germany really are. If you've lived in Europe all your life, you never really know how much happier you could be until you visit a place like Latin America. At first, you wonder how people with so little money could be so happy, but they've got different priorities, and it makes for a richer life. He says, in Germany, we've got 8.5% inflation, more like 35%, but it's like stopping a forest fire with a bucket of water. That's how our politicians deal with it. They're the ones that caused it, and they're making it worse. Do they blame themselves? Never. Politicians never take responsibility unless they're giving away something for free, like an entitlement. Our politicians are a curse. They've opened the floodgates to Muslims and Africans from all countries, too. Wouldn't be bad if they had skills, but most of these newcomers, perhaps all, don't even have a high school education and can't speak German, French, or English, or Spanish, nor do they want to assimilate at all. In some parts of every German city, there are places the cops won't even patrol. There are places in every big German city like walking into a Kasbah in the 19th century. Germany's looking more and more like Istanbul. None of the newcomers wants to assimilate except just enough to apply for government benefits. Everyone who comes thinks they've got automatic rights and free things coming to them, even though back in their home countries they had no such rights or benefits at all. Though he says regular German folks have always prepared accordingly for the lean times. But they're not prepared for this and for what's coming next. No one's prepared for it, and no amount of political wrangling can fix it. That's one reason I got out and moved to Mexico. However, my girlfriend wouldn't leave. She works for the German rail service and has great benefits. That's all she and so many others seem to care about. Job security with benefits. No matter how many jabs, gloves, and masks they force on you. anything for job security and the promise of a pension. We shall see how long that lasts when Germans realize Germany and Europe are bankrupt. He says, in many ways, Mexico is much better off than Germany. But it's imperative, though, for people to know what life is like in the many regions of Mexico where corruption and crime are prevalent. Unfortunately, he says, I have found a dichotomy within the Mexican people. They are mostly honorable when it comes to their friends and family, but when it comes to us Europeans or gringos, they're nice enough to us when things are going well, but will knife you in the back if given half the chance when things go sour. I think you call it in English, fair weather friends. He says all humans are corruptible, but for Mexicans, they're on another level. Of course, we Europeans and gringos are corruptible too, but if we get screwed or gouged by another gringo or expat, at least sometimes the perpetrators harbor a bit of guilt or even a touch of shame. Example, I live in a gated community in Puerto Vallarta. I fired my gardener for stealing from me. I actually caught him stealing tools and gave him a chance the first time. He did it again, so I fired him. Months later, I'm still finding things missing from my garage. 3 months later, I saw him in my own gated colony working as a gardener for a gringo just two doors down. He had no shame and embarrassment at all. I realized this as I passed by, sort of gawking at him in surprise. He excitedly waved to me in a genuinely friendly way, as if we were long-lost friends. I think if I would have invited him over to my patio for a beer, we could have had a nice afternoon together, and then he would have stolen the glasses. At the time, I was thinking, should I warn his new boss? Now, after thinking on it a while, I'm fairly certain he put me down as a reference. Nothing surprises me anymore. I don't know the gringo, his new boss, so I thought it best not to get involved. Besides, as you have said in a past show, Johnny, all Latinos, even the best of them, have a guy in the family with gang tattoos, and that opens up a lot of dark possibilities. Better not to get involved. Because of so many problems in Europe, lots of Germans are coming to Mexico too. I've met some and have some German friends here now. And one of our frequent topics of discussion is, why do workers steal? And why do cops take bribes? It can't only be about poverty and low wages. I've been to Asia and India, and I've met some very poor people, much poorer than Mexicans, and many are very honest and noble and wouldn't steal a thing. In Germany, workers stealing and cops taking bribes, that's practically unheard of in Germany. You steal something or bribe a cop and you'll get a year in jail for sure, no exceptions. There's corruption in Germany, but it's very well hidden. Though I have some educated Mexican friends that justify it as a historic legacy. They say their legislators and colonizers have taught them very well. They say it's never black and white. They tell me in Mexico, an honest guy is one that's not too corrupt. For example, if you need a visa to travel to the UK, you pay $50 to the government official in charge of the appointments to jump the 3-month queue and get that appointment in 2 days. So is it worth it? Probably. And another example I've heard, you can bribe a public hospital nurse with $50 to get your grandma a spare tank of oxygen. Is it worth it? Probably, especially if grandma's in bad shape. That's the way Mexico operates. You need to pay little mordidas or bites along the way, or the paperwork does not get shuffled in your direction. It's the poor people who end up living half their lives standing in lines. Unfortunately, in a country where a large portion of police force is corrupt, that means there's no one to properly mentor new guys entering the force, and so the cycle continues. And about the ever-escalating violence in Mexico, there's really no way to correct it. There are crusading Mexican journalists, however. 30 of them have been killed this year. And anyone who tries to document the details of cartels and their partnerships with the police, military, and the Mexican government, and the business sector, they're on someone's hit list, and their families are too. Now, Johnny, Holger says, I know this email sounds rather bleak, but it's still so much better than living in Germany. All right, thanks for that, Holger. We'll file that report under Getting the Hell Out of Germany While You Still Can. By the way, Holger, on the subject of Mexico, for much more detail on the real boots-on-the-ground deal, you know, crime, cartels, punishment, and lack thereof, I highly suggest, if any of you out there have the starry-eyed impression that it's okay to have a plan B in Mexico, because you're thinking things will improve, right? Well, I hate to dissuade you of that fantasy, but I'm telling you, you must see the latest Lex Fridman show. Came out on YouTube, I think it was December 11th, just a few days ago. He interviews a Mexican SWAT team narco investigator, Ed Calderon. You may have heard of him before. He was a guest on Joe Rogan's show a couple of years ago. He talks about doing narco undercover work in Mexico and how it's a complete failure. Anyway, if you're interested in having a plan B in Mexico at all, you have to see this four-hour interview. If you want the link, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Anyway, this ex-narco investigator, Ed Calderon, is permanently in the USA now and can't go back to Mexico. Well, he could, but they'll probably snuff him. He was born in Mexico, became a U.S.-Mexico liaison for cartel investigations, a U.S.-trained high-level cop. He's sort of a lone wolf, and that's his problem. He wouldn't take any cartel money. Luckily, he was able to go to the U.S. legally because he married an American girl. He says in the interview, eventually all Mexican cops and politicians are approached by one of the cartels operating in their area. You have to throw in your hat with one of those cartels. And then your job after that is to work against the other rivals. He says there are something like 30 cartels operating in Mexico, with usually three different cartels or gangs operating in a given area or city. So in any specific city like Puerto Vallarta, there are two or three gangs that run everything. He says once you're approached, you don't actually work hand in hand with them, but you're supposed to make sure you bust the other gang a lot more often than the one you threw in with. In other words, he says, once you throw in with a gang, your job is to weaken the other gangs in the area. And like him, he says, if you don't throw in with one gang or another, they'll mess with you and your family. And they mess hard. Anyway, you just have to see that recent Lex Fridman YouTube. You'll definitely think twice about having your plan B in Mexico, that's for sure. The thing is, you can't just think about that nice, cozy little gringo neighborhood you're in right now. Unless you're the type that just lives from day to day, don't plan into the future at all, because you have to look a year, 2 years, five, even 10 years ahead. You have to ask yourself, is the safety and security issue staying the same, getting better or worse? Well, isn't it funny? There isn't a single person I know living in Mexico right now who's ever said things are getting better. Funny. It's the same answer you get from people living up in the States. No one says it's getting better. So then why would you want to move, dig in, have a plan B anywhere where you know things are just getting worse? Oh, I know. It's just a quick hop over the border. And you've got friends down there, right? And lots of people speak English, so you don't have to learn the language. Yeah, shoulda, woulda, coulda gone farther south, but didn't. At least you got out of Dodge, right? You know, luckily for me, I made most of my big mistakes when I was in my 20s. I had 101 chances to move to Mexico, you know. I didn't, though, because I saw what was happening way back when. Oh, listen, here's an announcement. You know, this show goes out on Friday, December 16th, 2022. Just to let you know, there won't be a show for Sunday, December 18th. I'll be off the radar again, doing some scouting, trying to organize and put together the dates for my upcoming Expat Insider seminar, which will probably be in March. We'll keep you posted on that, so stay tuned. But no show for this Sunday, the 18th. There'll be a rerun. Instead, there'll be an old episode, The Worst of the Expat Files. Lots to choose from there. All right, now, regarding home building, remodeling, and just general hardware store searching, I'd like to read a few excerpts from an article that sort of hit home for me right away since I built a few houses, and some of you gringos and expats are in the same spot. This is from an email article from an expat down in Ecuador. He entitles it, In Search of a Decent Electrical Outlet, One Expat's Journey of Foreign Product Adaptation in a Strange Land. And I'll paraphrase this. He says, one of the problems most gringos and expats have when they enter another country, aside from learning the basics of a new language, if they can, is to decide whether they're going to adapt to the new culture or try to modify it to fit the culture they came from. The problem is, he says, trying to change, for example, Latin culture to gringo culture is not in general very pleasing or satisfactory. Basically, you have to conform or suffer. Of course, all of us, when we arrive, will try to change things our way. But the better choice is to accept the local culture to one extent or another, or suffer death by 1,000 paper cuts. In other words, flexibility is the key, but a lot of us never learn that till it's too late. Then he goes on to say, when I first came down to Latin America, one of my first challenges was replacing a malfunctioning electrical outlet. Easy peasy, right? He says, most people familiar with Latin American electrical outlets already know what I discovered, that they're generally fragile, cheap, thin, and short-lived. More like brittle toys made for very light use. A big difference when compared to first-world standard commercial outlets, which can last a lifetime. Then he says, so naturally, I started looking in the local hardware stores and electric supply stores. At first, I only found the usual inferior, all plastic thin things and decided to look farther afield. I heard of two large hardware stores near the airport, and I decided the hour-long trip may be worth it. But, alas, he said, the electric outlets and switches there were the same old cheap junk that you see in every other corner hardware store. Next stop, another big hardware store that was far out of my way. Turns out, though, it was allied with the True Value hardware store chain in the U.S. I recognized the logo, so I headed to the electrical outlet aisle. At first glance, I saw a whole rack of the all-too-familiar cheap plastic ones for around $2. But then, surprise, surprise, an entire shelf of North American-style outlets, twice as heavy, twice as thick, and twice the price, with the True Value logo. Then he says, understand, most of the wiring in Latin America is two-conductor with no ground wire to be connected, or ground leg, or green wire earth ground, or green pin on the outlet. Now, you can connect all the three pins correctly, but to do it correctly is a lot of extra work, because you have to drive a copper grounding rod into the soil somewhere to attach that green earth wire. Which brings up an important point. If you're buying a new home or building a new home or remodeling, you should seriously have your electrical contractor wire the place with three wires. The hot, the neutral, and the ground. If you don't ask, chances are they'll skip the earth ground. That's why you'll occasionally get a shocker when barefoot and touching metal surfaces around the house. All right, me, Johnny, here again. Yeah, lots of times you'll walk into a house and you'll see those standard three-prong outlets everywhere, just like you see them in the States. But the earth ground, the green wire, won't be connected, but you'll never know that unless you have to open one of those things up. But then again, if you buy a house or apartment, should you go through all that trouble of rewiring the thing? Well, I'd say in most cases, no, except for the fact that Latinos are notoriously stingy in the placement of those outlets, so you'll want to add more. That's why most outlets in kitchens and offices are loaded up with extensions and what electricians in the States call cheater plugs. So then it's logical to ask, why don't more Latino homes fry and get burned to a frazzle? Since there are lots of internal electrical wire meltdowns in Latin homes, I see them all the time. Mostly from outlet overload, because as mentioned, they're very stingy with the outlets. The main reason why you don't see houses burning down from electrical shorts and such is because the homes are made of concrete and concrete block. In other words, pure dumb luck.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos!